Across the UK and around the world on the internet, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Thank you again so much for supporting the show. Thank you for keeping the emails coming even when I haven't been doing shows. I've been getting a traffic of email from actually all corners of the world now. Thank you to the people who've emailed from Australia and from Canada and from the North American continent generally. Thank you for those and all the emails across Britain. Keeping the concept going, they certainly do. Now, the one thing that I'm learning as I put together this concept is that it is much more difficult than I thought it would be. Not necessarily the actual setting up of guests and doing interviews and making the show happen, but the technical aspects of getting it out on the internet and finding ways to do it. I'm getting there. It's a challenge. And I tell you something, I've learned from it. These things, I guess, are experiences that teach you. And, you know, I've certainly learned in 2006 that we can say. This show is going to be partly about self-empowerment, with an old guest from the radio show and a new guest, somebody you won't have heard before. The old guest is Dr. Louis Turi, who's become a household name almost in the United States for what he did on the radio show in the UK with me, making predictions, setting dates when things would happen. He got more response than any other single guest that I had on the radio show. He's not entirely going to talk about that this time. He will do some predicting, give some dates, but what he will be doing is talking about ways that by connecting with something beyond yourself and connecting with everybody else, the consciousness of everybody else anyway, we can make ourselves better and make the world a better place. Sounds good. He's going to explain that. Sven Soufi is the author of a new book called More Than Men and Makeup. It's all about tapping into your own mental resources. She's a hypnotherapist but has other irons in other fires as well. All about tapping into your own resources to make things better for yourself, to solve those situations that you really don't like. So two guests about self-empowerment, two different takes on how you see resources within yourself and without yourself that can make things better. It'll all become perfectly clear. Plus, we get right back to basics and we talk to UFO expert Nick Pope. Nick Pope, the man who was employed by the British government, the Ministry of Defence this side of the Atlantic, to investigate UFOs when people made reports of them, whether those people were employed by government departments or whether they were just like you and me, people who'd seen things in the sky that they couldn't explain. Nick was the man who went back through the files, phoned up the right people, did the right investigations, cross-checked everything and tried to see if actually there was some truth in it. And much of the time, there wasn't. But the exciting part was, sometimes there was. Now, Nick is saying at the moment that since he left that job and the way things are done now, it's possible that if you make a report today, it's not going to get investigated the way that it was in the past. Not because of any conspiracy or anything like that, just because of the way systems work. He will explain that. First up, though, an old friend of this show, Dr. Louis Turi. Oh, Louis in California, nice to have you on. Now, Louis, before we put Louis on, Louis was born in France, moved to the United States, and has become a bit of a star out there, doing exactly what he did on the radio in the UK, and that is predicting various things. Louis, like I say, good to have you on, and it's been a hell of a year for me, 2006. I'm not sure what it's been like for you, but I think for a lot of people, this has been one cathartic year.
How do I understand that? I don't know. If you did download the book that I offered, I think on your show, you will read that those born in June, by the way, Art Bell, George Norrie, my friend, and yourself were born in June. All of you are messengers of the gods.
And those are guys who do a show like this show across the United States. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and anyway, Albert was born in June. You know what he did? He moved and restructured his career and his home. Exactly what I wrote in the book. So all of those born in June, including you, Albert and George Norrie, will be forced to completely and entirely restructure their careers.
Yeah, but my prediction came true. Louis, you're an astrologer. You know how this works. Geminis, right. We are never happy, Geminis, unless we are, number one, confronting challenges, and number two, got to have loads of change in our lives. We may moan and complain about change, but that's what drives us, I think. I reckon so.
That's the essence. Life is a constant process of change, and you know it, and I know it. And as a messenger of the gods, you're going to be forced to actually move forward. And remember, what I teach my students, the future is nothing else than a reincarnation of the thought. And your subconscious wanted you to reach your wishes. Your wishes could not be granted where you used to be once upon a time, and things did happen for that very purpose.
I have a feeling that's the truth probably in all life, Louis. I don't know. The longer I live and the more I see, I reckon most things happen for a purpose. And I might, you know, work at a news job a lot of the time. That's what I do. I'm a news guy. And that's all very serious, hard fact. But beyond that, you think to yourself as you sit back at the end of the day, there is a purpose to all of this. This is not all random. That's what I think.
No, not at all. Not at all. Have you heard of this movie, The Secret?
Mm-hmm. Tell me.
It's a bunch of people from the United States that got together and tried to explain how the subconscious operates. They did a good job. It's very, very productive. But they have only half of the key, not being hypnotherapists or astropsychologists. They can only offer the masses half of the key of the secret of the subconscious. You know, you have to understand that when you were, let's say a year ago, you had wishes. You had dreams. Those wishes and dreams could not be granted because of the environment, because of the situation that you are in. All this has a very specific purpose, and the purpose is to raise yourself and your life to a much higher level. So I would say whatever happened to you and other people is a liberation to get to your wishes, not loss.
Well, you know, Louis, I think you're preaching to the converted there. Now, look, I spent in the, year, 18 months or so, we knew each other in the other place where I was on the radio across the UK. I spent a lot of time trying to work out exactly what Louis Turi is. How would you describe yourself? Have you got a nice, short, pat way of describing what Louis Turi does?
Okay.
There's a challenge for you.
Well, I guess I went to the same school that Einstein, and I was sitting between Mozart and Beethoven. What it means simply okay. There is no school that produces geniuses. You're set by the universal mind to expose and to find your gift and then expose them to the masses. I'm a regular guy. I'm exactly like you or anybody else. And I found myself, I found my gift, and I offer it to society. I'm just a very normal person with a very different astrological chart, if that can help you.
But what are you, astrologer, psychologist? You seem to me to be a mix of all of those things altogether.
I have the moon in Gemini, so I am like you, the jack of all trades. I am an engineer. I'm a pilot. I write books. I was a singer. I graduated from the Royal School of Music. I'm a motivational speaker. I'm an hypnotherapist. God knows what. I have so much gift and an ability to serve the masses with it that become me.
The one thing that people loved on the radio show, you would come on and give dates and predict when things would happen, and those things would have a habit some of the time of happening, some of the time of partly happening, arguably mm-hmm. happening, and some of the time they didn't happen. But your hit rate was pretty good. We'll talk about some dates in just a little while, but one thing that you do that we never talked about is something that now fascinates me, and I've got another guest coming on the show a little later, Seven Soufi. Now, she's a hypnotherapist who believes very much in the power that is within all of us to change our own destiny by ourselves. And I know now, having done a bit more reading about Louis Turi, you believe something like that too.
Oh, I do not believe. I know so. I have stories that are simply mind-boggling in terms of how the subconscious reacts to your wishes and how he can bring about wishes. You know, your subconscious, calling God if you like it, does not know the difference between your fears or your wishes. So it's so very important that you make a full-time job to negate anything negative coming to you. Remember, like the Gemini energy, you have a polarity, up and down, black and white, the front, the back, God, devil, up and down. Your body is made with two eyes, two arms, two legs, two feet. You have a physical life and you have a spiritual life. Your subconscious is the mediator of what translates in this dense physical world from the creative force of the universe. So it's so very important that anytime you get depressed, anytime you get upset, oh, am I going to pay my bill? Oh, what am I going to do for the kids? Oh, my gosh, is my insurance paid? Oh, is my car going to, my car, you know, you got to be very careful because you are now putting wishes in the universe and your subconscious, not knowing the difference between the fears or the wishes, will bring about the result.
But so isn't that the greatest challenge that all of us face, though, Louis?
Indeed,
trying to be positive in the face of things that happen to people in their lives, challenges, whatever reason they're put there for, it is very hard to say, okay, that's happened, but everything's going to be fine, isn't it?
That's the idea. It's like, you know, just a couple of days ago, I was on the lake with Gary Busey, my famous actor friend. And before we left, I thought and I talked to the mechanic, Dave, we got to be careful not to hurt anybody with this new power boat. Guess what? Gary flew all the way through the boat, inside of the boat.
Wow.
And my own fear became true, so to speak.
And was he hurt? Did he hurt himself?
No. Everything was okay. I mean, I wrote everything that happened on my website, and the pictures of the boat. It's all there from my website. You can see the pictures and read everything that transpired.
See,
a couple days ago.
I've always believed that that is the kind of thing that happens. I'll tell you a story. I was driving, 6-10 months ago on one of our motorways, one of our highways here, the M4, very near Windsor Castle, funnily enough. And I had this feeling that I was going to have a problem with one of my tyres, that it was going to blow out. And it didn't happen. So I drive on, it was fine. There was no feeling that there was a problem in the car. There was nothing vibrating. It wasn't, nothing difficult with the car at all. Just driving along. Next thing, other drivers start to honk their horns at me, point at the car, and one of my tyres is in the process of blowing out. But I had known about that a long time before. Now, did I make that happen, or was it about to happen? What was the connection?
Well, what happened is, first of all, you have to learn to develop an understanding and the warnings of your subconscious. Your subconscious, sometimes you're like, I'm going to call somebody, and next thing you know, that person is calling you. Or you look at your clock, and it's 11:11. Or, you can even get up in the morning at 6 o'clock, even if you had a heavy night before, by just stimulating your subconscious to wake you up at that specific time. So you had a premonition, so to speak. Your subconscious was about to tell you something, but you also have generated a thought. Maybe your subconscious decided to blow your tire now because 2 miles ahead there is an accident that you should not be involved with. There is so many derivations of how the subconscious is interacting down here. But the first thing you've got to do is to be aware of it. And to do that, you have to raise your vibration. You have to cast away your fears. You have to make sure you're healthy, to have a good reasoning, a good mind, good foods. You don't take drugs. Don't drink. Just connect with the divine, and you'll be amazed at what your subconscious can do for you. As a matter of fact, your subconscious can bring about every single thing you ever dreamed for, and it will do it its own way, regardless sometimes how you think about going to it.
But Louis, where's it coming from? Is it coming from us? Is it coming from the universe? Is it coming from a combination of the two? When we make those wishes, when we have those desires, how does it work? What are we connecting to?
It's parallel world. If you look at the tiniest, smallest part of your body under the biggest microscope ever made by mankind, you will find out the same exact replica of our cosmos. The universe. We are a tiny universe inside. So there is no beginning, there is no end. Inside of you and above you, you only have eternity. So you're connected to parallel world. You're connected to the infinite, and there is a transcending power that goes through. And it's an interreaction, it's a chain. In other words, when the Bible said, for example, you are God, well, guess what? Inside of you, you have billions of worlds and a lot of people. So you are a God to the people and you, as much as you have God above you. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Explain. I'm not entirely sure I know what you mean there. You've got to give that to me in terms that that are going to be clearer for me.
I'm trying to be as logical as possible. You are a replica of the universe inside out. So inside of you, you have suns and moons and planets and cosmoses and galaxies. That's what you are inside. It's infinite to the tiniest, smallest part, and it's infinite above in the grandiose manifestation. And you are in between, or in some level, so to speak. The power is there. So if you decide to stop drinking and stop smoking, you become a better God for the people that are under you that have prayed to have a better, healthy life.
Well, that's what I haven't heard before. So we all have, in a way, is what you're saying, Louis, we all have a sort of responsibility.
Yes, you are a God in training on this dense physical world, and of course the church will not teach you that, because that's losing power. And you have the creative forces. You were born at the image of God. That's what the Bible says. You have this power. You like it or not, you know it or not, you have the essence of creation within the core of your soul. You need to be aware of it, that you need to work around it. Then you become a God and create your own kingdom like I did.
So if you have those positive thoughts that we're talking about, the thought that whatever will work out in your life,
right,
you're actually passing that down the chain to other people and other things connected to you, and
you
it's also coming from up the chain into you. So you're you're almost like a power transformer.
That's exactly what you are. Your thoughts are like a laser beam. they're going to go in time and space through matter, through the walls. They're going to reach people. They're going to reach situation, and they're going to be connecting and bringing to you what you're looking for. There is absolutely no accident. I do not believe in the word accident. There is reasons unknown behind it. It's like, you know, if you have a very specific plan to reach a goal and you do not reach that goal, don't be mad, don't be upset, don't be pissed off, sorry my French, just, you know, just realize that there is something, there is a power that knows better than you, and this power has decided to take you in a different route. So take it, accept it, embrace it, welcome it, and don't be mad. Anything that comes to you, do not give a chance for negativity, which is the forces of evil. The only way the forces of evil are going to be to survive if it's you fit them with negative thoughts.
Now, look to it. If you're driving down to the shopping mall where you live and some guy bumps your car, do you think to yourself, what an idiot, I'm really angry, I love my car, and that guy's just damaged it? Or do you think, well, there has to be a purpose in this? Can you always get a positive out of something like that?
It happened to me so many times to have those embassy running into my Corvette, scratching into God knows what. I'm not joking. It happened all the time. But it could be because the universal laws, meaning you're driving after the full moon when Mercury is retrograde and you're paying the price of ignorance because you didn't give enough attention. I had a feeling when I parked next to this big rig not to put my Corvette there. The guy was inside. He came out halfway drunk and he ran into my car. I kind of saw it, but I didn't act upon it, and I kind of paid a price. But to me, it was a valuable lesson. So now I have learned to listen a little bit more to my subconscious. I know if I put a t-shirt upside down that I'm going to have an incredible surprise. If the moon is waxing, it'll be positive. If the moon is waning, it'll be negative. I already have supreme connection with my subconscious. Your subconscious can be trained to give you information. After all, this is how Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce was able to do what they were doing.
So for people who are just getting into this idea, and it's you know, stretching their heads a bit here in the UK and around the world, what is a simple way to start to get into this?
Well, first of all, they have to bring up their own cosmic consciousness. They have to know their relationship with the divine. They have to know how the subconscious works. And, of course, I can provide full life reading. I have hypnotherapy tapes. I have all the basic training that these people would need to raise their own vibration and use the creative force of their subconscious. It's a matter of education. Remember, I always teach my students, ignorance is evil. Knowledge is power. You know, when I came in this country in 1984, I didn't have a boat, I didn't have a Corvette, I didn't have a house, I had nothing. I was a poor, homeless, little French from England.
So what gave them to you, Louis? Was it positive thinking? Did you think, I'm going to be successful, and you were? What happened?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of work behind it. You got to have the positive thought, and then you have to know some universal rules that apply to your life. You know, it's like if you go shopping, you are going to get stop. You gotta stop at a red light or the stop sign. That's the laws of man. There is different laws written in light through the universal rules, and I understand and use those rules. It's allowing me to go much faster to get to my goals. Add all this to the power of the subconscious, and I'm on my way, and I did it my way.
Now, let me throw this at you. I find in my life, and maybe it works for everybody, I don't know, but when I think to myself, I want to do this, and I'd like to succeed at it, but actually it doesn't matter that much. I'm not going to die if this does not work. If I go into a project with that attitude, it tends to work out better for me. Now, is that just pure psychology, or is that me working with the universe somehow?
Well, you know, that my philosophy is very clear, and that's very important. So I demand your attention and all your listeners' attention now, because that's part of one of the key of the secrets, okay? I don't ask. I don't beg. I don't pray. I don't hope. I am not washy-washy yellow. I demand. And that's the difference between me, my thoughts, and the results, and anyone else.
That's very hard for us here in the UK, Louis, because, you know, we're taught to be very polite and to defer to everybody else and not demand anything, to let everybody else go through the doors before us and all the rest of it. So that's hard for us here.
Well, you've also been taught, you know, that they're going to go to hell if you don't pray your rosary. You know, things are changing. This world is a constant process of changes. Education, information is pouring left and right. There is a lot of new energy coming in. And you can demand things and being polite. I demand things to myself. I don't demand it to nobody else because I don't need anybody.
But actually, what you're saying is fascinating. What you're saying is that if you demand what you want and then you get it through positive thought and all the rest of it, because of that connection with everything down the chain from you, you're passing on good things to them.
That's exactly what it is. Let me give you... Do you think... Have you heard of that little story that a 65-pound lady will get to a car and left it up because a toddler ran under it? Have you heard of that story?
Uh-uh.
Well, it is a fact. It is a fact that you could generate a tremendous force. That lady, she saw a baby going under a car. She didn't hesitate. She didn't beg. She didn't hope. She went there and she left the car. And the baby was not on. You'd be amazed of the power you generate through a lot of fears or a lot of power. But it doesn't matter how you generate the thought. It could be stimulated by tremendous fears that becomes positive. You don't want to die. You don't want this to happen. It becomes a motor forces that steal the power of your subconscious and give you the energy or the power you need to accomplish the miracle. It's all within the subconscious.
And although people in this day and age may not understand how all of that works, one thing I can be sure of, and I know you believe this too, Louis, that more and more people are starting to question, what is this all about? What am I here for? What is the final end of everything? What are we moving towards? Now, more people asking those questions today, I would say, than have ever asked them.
Well, mostly because the age of Pisces and religion and ignorance and fear and religious poisoning is being cast aside by the new age of Aquarius, which is vibrant, which is genius-like. In the age of communication and information led you now to serve a much bigger audience through the means of Aquarius, which is high-tech and the World Wide Web. So things are set in a way that we, people like you and I, are now enabling people listening to this show to raise their vibrations and gather the information they need to grow.
Which is important, and at least doing this show the way that I'm doing it now, I don't have to be responsible to anybody. I can do whatever I want to do. Technically, I know how to do it. I know how to put together a radio show because I learned that down the years, but this is the modern world and it's different. You were, Louis Tourie, and I always told you this, and it was absolutely true, the one guest who on the UK radio show got more response than anybody else. Listeners loved you. They were intrigued and fascinated by you. I would say for every one email that I got saying, who is this man? He's talking garbage. I would get 40 emails from people saying, I want to know more about this guy. What's his website address? You know, it was that kind of relationship. I know that you went on to do stuff in America, and you're still doing stuff on radio in America.
Big time.
And have been phenomenally successful with it, which I'm very glad about. You know, I kind of feel, in a way, I didn't discover you, but I think I've been part of your path somewhere along the way. One of the things you used to do, and we're looking towards 2007 now, you used to give a list of dates which things would happen. Have you got any dates as we go towards the end of this year and into next?
Well, okay, at the end of this year, let's go for the 25th and the 26th of this month. I'm not going to go past that. Okay, let's see. Let me double check. December, okay, November. Okay, the 25th or the 26th, be ready for either earthquakes or large explosion. And I cannot tell you when and where because I don't want to scare people. But I'm telling you to be ready for some nasty news. Maybe from Japan, let me tell you that, okay? Big explosion, big earthquake, 25th, 26th of this month.
Because as you know, Japan, not so long ago, was on tsunami alert because of a big earthquake off the coast.
It's coming back. Now, some bad news. Around the 7th, the 6th or the 7th of December, I see some relocation because of nature devastative forces also. It'll be the beginning of the end of important phases of life for a lot of people. Let's go to the 7th, okay, 7th of December. Beginning or ending of important phases of life. And then the nasty one will be on the 15th or 16th. I see those 2 days where a dramatic news involving either terrorism and death. I don't want to elaborate, but that's the date I'm giving you. And I always give negative dates so people, sad enough, can realize that it has happened because the general flux is negative. So by giving negative date, when the universe is going to be negative, it will unfold. It always did. It always will.
And but having talked, as we did talk about positive thinking, is it possible for mankind, say millions of people hear what we're talking about now and those dates, if millions of people got together and thought this isn't going to happen between themselves, would they be able to avert the problem?
Absolutely. The world is learning that. Right now, if you take a compass, it points out the north or the true north pole, which is a negative energy. I mean, the world has been trained last 2,000 years to expect the apocalyptic end of time and Elvis or Jesus to come back.
Now, I've said this to you before, and I'll say it to you again because I want to hear your response to it now. Mm-hmm. But if something huge doesn't happen in December like that, you can always say, well, people put their minds to it and averted it.
It will happen because mankind has not yet reached the understanding of and controlling his thought process. There is absolutely no doubt on the data that I gave you, and I will make sure to let you know because it's ahead of us. It'll be on my website anyway. Those dates are going to be on my website also. You know, not long ago on the George Norrie Coast to Coast, I gave some specific dates mentioning the FBI and the CIA and a very, very famous person to die. And when you go to my website and you can read everything took place.
All right, now that website's www.drturi. Now, we always got emails from people saying, how do you spell that? It's drturi.com. And I have to say, it's a very well put together website and fascinating. If you've never seen it before, never seen anything like this before, I think it's going to blow your mind. But Louis Turi, great pleasure. I'm glad you're still doing what you were always doing and getting into new things, it seems to me.
You bet.
What are your plans for 2007, Lou?
I have a big conference at the Hilton in Los Angeles in a couple of weeks from today, and I've got a bunch of teaching and all sorts of things. I might be going to the UK too, but I'll let you know.
Yeah, no, it'd be good to see you when you come here, Louis, because I've got a feeling there's an awful lot more, just as there always was with you and me. Awful lot more to talk about. Louis Turi, that's Dr. Turi, the man who was such a star on The Unexplained when it was on the radio on TalkSport in the UK and now here on the internet. Louis, a pleasure to talk to you again.
Always. Last thing before I go, anybody who goes to my website, drturi.com, can download my free book, Moon Power, to check out what happened to them the entire year.
It's drturi.com. Now, we mentioned at the beginning of that little chat with Louis, and it's always good to hear from him, about Sven Sofi. Now, Sven Sofi is a hypnotherapist who's just published a book called More Than Men and Makeup. It's all about how, by using the power of your mind, you can change events for yourself. You can actually get a better outcome, a better future for yourself. It's a different take on what Louis was talking about, which is more connected to the cosmos, something that's more practical and in your head. Sven and I met up in a studio in London. Here's what we talked about.
We all walk around, most of us walk around knowing what we need to do, but being unable to do it. Because consciously you know, but unconsciously you have all these blocks stopping you. So once you get rid of the blocks, then those advices, those strategies, the effective strategies can be bedded in. But if you've got those blocks, it's a bit like if you're in a straitjacket and you've got a lovely meal to eat, you may know that you need to eat that meal, but you can't get your hands on the knife and fork to eat it.
I saw somebody recently, actually, it was a session for me, I don't mind admitting this at all, and she said, okay, you're doing really well in what you do, but you could do even better. And what is holding you back is past life patterning, things that come not necessarily from your dad or from his generation, but perhaps from another generation and have been transmitted down to you, and you need to get rid of that block. Is this what you're into?
It's interesting you say that. I don't generally say this. And yes, I don't know if there is a past life or not. What I do know is that the unconscious mind believes in some instances there is a past life. I work with the structure of whatever comes up from a client or from my own mind. So the way I see it is that there is a store of information there. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. What matters is what's the result you're trying to achieve and what are the blocks stopping you from achieving it. Whether it's a past life or whether it's this current life, whether it's from age 1 to 3 or 3 to 7, which it could be up to 7 is generally the core time, or past life, it doesn't matter to me. And yes, it can be affected by that as well.
So you're not getting involved in the debate whether there is or there isn't.
Exactly. I don't care.
It's what the person in front of you believes. And
exactly.
If the person in front of you believes that actually that is the case and there are things from another life, from another dimension, aliens, whatever... If that's a problem, then it's about shifting it.
It is exactly about shifting it. And also bear in mind that some people don't even consciously believe that there is a past life. But when they're in a trance state, they actually come up with a past life and they look more baffled than at all. I mean, they're very surprised to discover that that's what comes up for them. Even in this last year, I have achieved with clients, you know, working with clients, phenomenal stuff that I... didn't realize it was possible. Things that we'd been working on in the past that would have taken half a day to do could do literally instantly.
All right, think of your best example. You don't have to name names, but the best example of somebody who succeeded with your help, and tell me what you did with them and how they bettered themselves.
Okay, the first person that came into mind is someone I worked with earlier this year. Six sessions, of which we started talking as a initially in February. From that time to now, she's started her own business. She's happy about herself. In fact, I should take a step back. When I first spoke with her, she was absolutely distraught of what was going on in the workplace. Her personal life had issues. She had issues with her son. Lovely boy, but you know, very shy, wouldn't go out, wouldn't interact with people. In her career, there were things happening she wasn't happy with. Basically, she was confused in a lot of aspects. And it was from the work side to get clarity about her work was the actual initial focus of the work we did together. And what you'll find is when you start working in this area, the effect moves out. So you work in one area of your life, but then it affects your relationship with your partner. It affects your interaction with your son. What she discovered over the summer, because she spent more time with him because she gave up her job, she started her own business. And in the summer, what she wanted was to spend some time with her son. From that time, he became more confident. He started to do speeches at family events.
Okay, so the effect spread out. I still don't understand the cause side of it. The side that you're involved in, the unlocking of whatever it might have been.
Unlocking.
How does that
okay.
work?
Okay, how that works is, and I don't want to go into the details of her because you'll be able to pinpoint her from the clients. I've got a launch happening.
Jigsaw identification, I think they
absolutely.
Call it. Yeah. Okay, well, we don't need to do that. We just need to know what you did.
Absolutely. And what you do in all of these situations is basically you find out what the objective is, which for her it was to get clarity in her workplace and to move forward in a positive way. And then look at the things that are stopping her or to stopping whoever it is. And let me highlight this so that people do know is that everyone always has issues that I've worked with around confidence, and it goes back to a very young age, and it's something to do with one of the parents or the person that had the biggest impact on that person as they were growing up. And there's always something like that, and we're all walking around with that. I had it when I had work myself or in this area. Every client I've worked with has had it. It's something that we walk around with and we think, you know, we're the only ones. But it's not. And when you delve into it and deal with it, it's like a big weight is lifted off your shoulders. You no longer have to carry it. You let it go.
Okay, I've just randomly opened this book.
Brilliant.
And on page 114, is your man cheating on you question? Yeah, a big question. Lots of people listening to this will have confronted that one. I would have thought, ever wondered if your partner is cheating on you? Even if it's just a feeling, a thought, it cuts to the very core. Could he do this to me? Now, what's that all about? How are you trying to help there?
How I'm trying to help there is that basically, I mean, that's the second part of the book where there's issues, specific issues or challenges people deal with. Basically, you can find out if someone is lying to you or not very easily because you're tapping into the unconscious mind. There's 2 million bits per second of information coming at you at any given time. That's coming at you. Now, we can only process 7 ± 2. That's the conscious mind. So all that information is there. When we lie to someone, we cannot help but give it away. But generally, what people do is they delete, distort, generalize. They pretend they don't see the signs. Okay. They don't want to see it.
But that's all like a computer. You know,
exactly.
Anything you look at or do on a computer is stored somewhere in the free space. You're saying that in your brain's free space, all those cues that will tell you the truth are there anyway.
Absolutely.
If you can get to them.
Absolutely. Okay. It's not an if. You can get to them. That's how the exercises are in there. You can get to it. The question is, how quickly can you get to it?
Do you know what I'd like to get to? I'd like to get to what I call, in my life, the Saturday morning feeling. Now, you know, during the week, I tend to get up very early in the morning to go to work. It's busy. Saturday morning, I tend to wake up and have my greatest bits of inspiration, my greatest ideas, thoughts about the world, things I'm going to do. Everything seems great on a Saturday morning. I'd like to be able to make my brain feel that way more often.
You
can you help with that?
Absolutely. I guess the question for you would be, what stops you from doing that every day?
It not being Saturday, I think, is probably the answer to the question.
You see, that's really important. So then the question comes, if this was a session, one, you would need to be in a trance, so you're not in the right state. But even so, the kind of questions I would ask is, what is it you really want? So you want it to be Saturday every morning.
Ideally.
Okay, so what stops you is it's not Saturday. So is there anything you can do to change it so it is Saturday every morning for you?
Not go to work.
Well, there you go. There's an answer. But the thing is, if you were to go to work every day, what would you need to do, or what needs to be different so that it is like Saturday morning for you every day?
Okay, I'm getting this. So this is the point. I mean, what you've done just there, in a really trivial example from me, but you've just given me in 15 seconds the essence of the whole book and what you do.
Well, I hope so. Yes, absolutely. The thing is, when you do these kind of questions when you're in a trance, you get the answers unconsciously, which is far more powerful than when you do the conscious. But we're having a banter here, which is great. And this is conscious conversation, which sometimes unconscious things pop up as well. And it's so much more powerful if you get yourself into a trance and just ask the right questions. The mind will just get there. Change happens in an instant. It just happens straight away. And what we do is we confuse things. Now, the essence, I mean, this is something I do want to say on the show. If you imagine a sponge, it's got egg on it. I don't know if you've ever smelt it, but it's disgustingly smelly. If it's gone off, it's like, it's horrible, horrible. Now, if you walk into a room, a kitchen that has a dirty sponge on it, it's going to smell awful. And you're going to think, oh my God, there's going to be something horrendously big and ugly and whatever. It's going to be a little sponge with a little bit of eggy thing on it, and it's going to be foul. If you get rid of that and, you know, throw it out, clean the space around it, open the windows, it's going to be cleared straight away. So something that appears to be really big and really massive actually has a very simple way of, you know, getting rid of it. Now, that's the same as our emotions. We have these amazingly overwhelming emotions, you know, our fear, our angers, sadnesses. We have them. It overwhelms us. But actually, they are so simple to change and get rid of. Once you understand the root cause of why you have that emotion and you deal with it at an unconscious level, it just goes.
I think you'll hear more from Siven Soufi. Her book is called More Than Men and Makeup. I know she's working on one other project now. I'm not allowed to tell you what it is, but it's a good one. And if you want to know more about her, then check out her website. Just web search her and you'll find that. We'll also put a link to it on our website, www.theunexplained.tv. And her book, by the way, is available on Amazon, as they say in the United States. Next up, a guest who did very well on the radio show whenever he came on, Nick Pope. Man who was employed by the British Ministry of Defence, the government, in other words. Can you believe that? There was a government employee in Britain paid to look into the UFO phenomenon. He doesn't do that now. He's working for himself on his own projects at the moment. And he's online to The Unexplained right now. Nick, good to have you on.
Hi, thanks very much.
Nick, now the last time we talked, which is just over a year, probably 18 months ago now, Nick, I think we were both very excited about the prospects for ufology in the coming year. And I'm just wondering, before we get into the meat of what we're about to talk about, whether you think any of those prospects for getting closer to whatever the truth might be have been fulfilled in this last year or so?
Yes, I think they have been. I mean, I think one of the big things has been the Ministry of Defence's rolling programme of disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act, and particularly the publication of a formally classified report, a 460-page study commissioned by the Defence Intelligence Staff into the UFO phenomenon. I actually played a part in getting this study commissioned, though I'd left by the time it was running. Now, this thing was classified secret UK eyes only at the time, so its release and the release of documents like that are, I think, hugely significant. Push into the public domain so much more information about this and raise the level of interest.
Well, I think it sounds interesting, but the only thing is, somebody once told me, and I wonder if you think that this might have any play here, that if you want to keep a thing secret or you want to keep a thing less than clear, what you do is you make available lots of information about it and people cannot interpret their way through all the information.
Yes, I suppose it's the old, the best place to hide a book is in a library.
Exactly, exactly, same thing.
There is something to that. I mean, for example, I think when the Ministry of Defence released a few years ago the file into Britain's most famous case, the Rendlesham Forest incident, several hundred pages were placed onto the Ministry of Defence website, and most of it, frankly, is just public correspondence. It's people writing in and saying, please tell me what you know about the Rendlesham incident, and it's the Ministry of Defence's replies. And in amongst those hundreds and hundreds of pages, a handful, about half a dozen documents from the policy branch where I worked and from the Defence Intelligence staff, and a couple of really critical innocent-looking documents talking about the assessment of the radiation readings from the landing site as being significantly higher than background levels, talking about the Commander-in-Chief, United States Air Force in Europe, making an unscheduled visit to the base to take evidence of this back to his headquarters in Germany, and talking about the fact that during the critical time of this incident, some of the radars were either switched off or not working properly.
Which is almost like that's, if ever there was a smoking gun about that case, that fact was, wasn't it?
I think it can be interpreted in a number of ways, but yes, I can see why things like that obviously do look very suspicious.
But isn't, Nick, the problem that up to now, the people who've looked into all of these things tend to be, in this country certainly, and probably in America as well, although maybe they're a bit better funded, but they're happy amateurs. You know, they're jolly people who are blundering through it all, and they've got a bit of an idea, and they'd love to find out something that nobody else knew. But they really don't know what they're looking for, most of them.
I really don't want to insult the UFO community, but yes, I mean, it is a hobby. And these people are well-intentioned amateurs, as you say, trying to use the Freedom of Information Act to uncover various documents, and very often not quite realizing what they've stumbled across. I mean, that's where I do play a role behind the scenes in advising UFO researchers, be they believers or skeptics, firstly what to look for and where to look for it, and secondly, when they've got it, to help them with the interpretation of it,
to know exactly what it is they found.
Yeah, exactly, to help them pinpoint those handful of documents that really are significant in the middle of perhaps a case file of over 100 papers.
Now, I know whenever you go on American radio, they're always fascinated by the fact that the British government, as they say, had somebody who was paid to investigate the UFO phenomenon. How did that happen, Nick? How did you come to be working for the MOD doing that?
Well, I joined the MOD in 1985, and like all civil servants, the philosophy in terms of your career progression is that you just get moved around a series of different postings, and quite simply, in 1991, I was asked if I would like to run the UFO project. So it sounded fascinating. I was looking for a move, so I said yes.
And did you believe the offer at the time? Did you believe that there would be such a thing?
Oh, well, I knew that the job existed. I'd seen the somewhat cryptic entry in the MOD telephone directory, and it just said UFOs. So I knew that there was a UFO job, but I didn't really know what the project entailed.
But it belongs in a way, or does it, to an era in Britain where secrecy, there was more of it, where there were more myths around. These days, you know, to almost quote a line from a song, everybody knows everything. It's much harder, isn't it? Isn't that whole process of investigating, finding things out, because we all think that we can explain everything, isn't it tougher?
I don't know. I mean, you're certainly right about the project being perhaps, I don't know, something that certainly had its roots in well, actually, the sort of post-war and then the Cold War era. And it's interesting that the MOD's UFO project was actually set up as a result of an initiative by the former chief scientific advisor, the great radar scientist Sir Henry Tizard, who said, and I think I wouldn't disagree with this phrase even now, but right back in 1950, he said that reports of sightings of UFOs ought not be dismissed without some form of proper scientific evaluation. And that's really the central underlying principle of the MOD's UFO project. But yes, I mean, I suppose there has been a profound culture change since then. We are in a multimedia society. We have access to the internet.
And we're a lot, as a race and as a nation, the UK certainly, we're very, very cynical about things.
We are, but none of that affects the bottom line, which is that these sightings are still being made. People are still seeing on a consistent basis very, very strange things in the sky. Now, they might have theories for them, but in effect, in a sense, there's probably more we can do now, perversely, by way of investigation, because things like radar systems are getting more sophisticated, because our ability to analyze and enhance photos and videos is so much better. There is more that can be done. The tragedy is, in a sense, that it's not been.
Well, that is the problem, isn't it? Before I ask you about that, I've got to ask you what I should have asked you at the beginning, and that is, how come you're not working for the MOD now?
Well, I have a number of outside business interests, and to quote that great... Well, the second greatest cliche, it's not I want to spend more time with my family, but no, I decided to leave government after 21 years to devote more time to my business interests. But 21 years, these days, it's a long, long time, and I think it was that point where I thought, if I don't leave now, I'm going to be here in another 20 years.
And in the 20-odd years that you were there, did you come across anything? And I know that you've had to sign the Official Secrets Act and say, you know, I have to keep certain things secret. But did you come across anything in that time that made you think there was much more to all of this than we as the public have ever been told?
Yes, I think so. I mean, obviously, as you say, I'm bound by the Official Secrets Act. Even though I'm left, it binds you for life. Inevitably, there'll be things that I can't divulge, things that certainly changed my mind. Now, I don't want you to think that in any way I'm talking about some nebulous conspiracy involving crashed saucers and dead aliens. I mean, that sort of stuff, for all I know, it may exist. I mean, probably in America. But I haven't, those aren't the sorts of things that I've come across. I'm not one of these people that claims to have seen a captured UFO in an Air Force hangar anywhere. But yes, there are things that I can't divulge, which I think are extremely interesting.
And were you interested when, at the end of last year, a man I interviewed at the time, Paul Hellyer, the ex-Canadian Defence Minister, came out and said, more or less, well, I'm an old man now and I've got nothing much to lose, and I can tell you that there is actually more to this than meets the eye.
Yes, I mean, I've actually met Paul Hellyer myself and discussed this issue with him, and I have enormous respect for him for speaking out so frankly. That, I mean, but perhaps the surprising thing is that he isn't actually the first person of that rank and of that level to speak out. There are, if you look back, so many examples of people, deep establishment insiders, speaking out passionately about their belief in this. I mean, some of the great post-war figures, such as Lord Dowding and Earl Mountbatten, more recently, Lord Hill Norton, a former chief of the defence staff, Sir Peter Horsley, a former Royal Equerry and commander-in-chief at Strike Command in the RAF. So there is this long line of establishment figures, and people think, oh, you know, the only people that believe in UFOs are hobbyists. Well, no, actually, it's all these government and military types.
Well, I spoke to Paul Hellyer, I think, just over a year ago, possibly exactly a year ago, and Paul Hellyer said, I will be saying more in the new year. That's this last year gone, and I've been looking for it all year, and it doesn't appear to have materialised.
He's busy on other projects at the moment, but he's not forgotten it. He still has a very deep interest in this subject, and I think it is a question of watch this space.
The thing that disappointed me, and there was much that excited me a lot about what he said, I found him fascinating, and we just let him talk. We just put him on the radio and let him talk. The thing that slightly disappointed me was that a lot of the basis of his argument for this seemed to be, well, he'd read a lot about it that had persuaded him, especially the writings of Philip Corso.
Yes, that is problematic. Having said that, he then, I believe, I don't know whether he did in his conversation with you, but certainly in the discussions that we had, he went on to qualify that, and he said, look, inevitably, when I come to a subject like this, I want to do some background research before I jump in and offer an opinion. But what was very significant, I thought, was that having read Philip Corso's book, and of course the claims about the Roswell crash and recovered alien technology, he actually then did check that out with one of his own contacts, and of course at that level, as a former defense minister in Canada, he was hooked into the entire network of retired generals, and he checked he checked this out, and the reply he got back was quite interesting. It was basically, yes, all of it's true and more, much more besides.
So what do we do with that information? That's the question.
Yeah, I mean,
where
I
do
think,
we go from there?
Exactly. I don't know, because it's not information that we have to release. I guess we just have to wait for it to be released, either from whistleblowers or indeed as part of some orchestrated official disclosure program.
Problem is, a whistleblower, the chance of there being a whistleblower in the UK is not very great, because all the people like yourself have had to sign the Official Secrets Act, and
yes,
thereby
and
they cannot tell what they know.
Exactly, and I don't consider myself to be a whistleblower. I'm far from it. I confine myself to material which has or is being released under the Freedom of Information Act, and everything I say can be verified at the National Archives, on the Ministry of Defence's website, where UFOs, incidentally, are the number one subject that people request under the Freedom of Information Act. It's not Iraq or Afghanistan or what my grandfather did in the war. It's UFOs.
People are questing now like they've never questioned before. Listen, Nick, do you believe that in this day and age, I've had an awful lot of people email me in the time that I've been connected with this and suggest to me that if anybody gets too close to the truth, even if they're in America, if they're in this country, wherever they happen to be, that surely and slowly they will be stopped one way or another. They will not be allowed to reveal any more than a certain amount. Is that just conspiracy theory nonsense, or do you think there might be some basis in that?
I suspect that these days, if anyone really wanted, if anyone had the smoking gun and wanted to, they could just walk into an internet cafe, tell their story, send it to a number of sites, and once you've pressed send, I wouldn't think in this day and age there's any way you could get the genie back into the bottle. And indeed, we've seen that with a number of whistleblowers, not necessarily on the UFO subject, but other things. Very quickly, even if you take down a website, a mirror site will spring up. So if somebody was that well connected, they would know how to do it. And of course, once you've disclosed, there's no point in stopping you, because it's out there. But I suspect, going back to the point you just made, I don't think we're going to see that in Britain. Not because of the Official Secrets Act, because I think, you know, in America there's the oath of secrecy too. But I just don't think in the UK we're actually briefed in on this subject. If the claims of people like Philip Corso, if the general that Paul Hellyer spoke to can be relied upon, I think this information is locked down in the United States. I mean, certainly when I was running the UFO project, we had a few interesting hints that there were some truly fascinating things going on in America in relation to the UFO subject. Project Blue Book may have been closed down, their official study in 69, but unofficially, a sort of loose network of intelligence agencies and officials. There was a UFO program.
But what about at presidential level? Every so often you'll get somebody saying to you, well, you look at Bill Clinton, he knows the truth. Or back to the days of Ronnie Reagan, they said, Ronald Reagan, he knows the truth.
I don't know. I mean, of course, interestingly, both President Carter and President Reagan actually saw UFOs and made official reports. So they probably have an interest. Whether they have a level of knowledge, I honestly don't know. I mean, I really got the impression, I'll have to choose my words carefully, that this subject was kept on a very, very close hold.
Need to know, as we call it in the UK.
Yes, and then some.
Now, let's get to the point. The reason that you got yourself into the news very recently in the UK, and I think around the world, you made the point, and it seemed perfectly credible to me, that the reason we're not getting as far as we should be getting with the research into all of this is that it's not possible in the way that it was possible when you worked for the MOD. Why?
Ironically, it's because of what I was just talking about. It's because of the phenomenal success of the Freedom of Information Act. The section where I worked, where the UFO project was run from, in the 90s, when I was doing that job, I spent my time researching and investigating the phenomenon, and I got about 200 or 300 UFO reports each year, so there was a fair bit to be getting on with. Nowadays, because it is the number one subject that people make requests for under the Freedom of Information Act, they are so busy dealing with this myriad of requests from journalists, from members of the public, that they just aren't having the time to do the research and investigation that should be the bread and butter of any UFO project.
Well, what's the answer to that? Is the answer to that to privatise it? Try and make money out of it?
I don't know. It's very difficult. I think the moment you take it out of government, firstly, you lose a degree of control, and secondly, with the best will in the world, presentationally, it just becomes another UFO group, and there are hundreds and thousands of those. It becomes another almost amateur effort. Perhaps you could do it under a defence contract, so that it doesn't look like just another UFO club, frankly. Or perhaps you bite the bullet and say, no, maybe we do need to throw a little bit more resources at this. Because it's exactly the same as the issue of the threat to the Earth from comets and asteroids. You can convince yourself that it's unlikely, statistically, that the Earth will be struck by the doomsday asteroid in our lifetime. But if it does strike, we're in big trouble. It's what's called a low-probability, high-consequence event. And the UFO phenomenon is exactly the same. You might not think it's very likely that we'll be visited by extraterrestrials, but if we are, and we have no plan, no contingency plan to deal with it, no one's even looking, then the potential consequences of getting it wrong are huge.
What do you think the potential consequences are?
They could range from the fairly scientific point about the biological hazard that might result from contact between...
Because they might bring something here that we can't handle.
Exactly. So there's a potential biohazard. So that in itself, given the consequences of that, should be a wake-up call, I think, to government and to the scientific community.
Are there MPs who are looking into this? I know that in the asteroid field, Lembit Opik is the only MP that I can think of who's interested in that. Any British MPs who are concerned with this subject that you do?
I'm not aware of it. I know that Norman Baker has asked a couple of recent questions about the MOD's UFO project, but quite what his angle was, I don't know. Back in the 90s, certainly, we had Martin Redmond, now deceased. He was quite interested and concerned, and he was asking exactly those sorts of questions. And, of course, before his death in 2004, former Chief of the Defence Staff, Lord Hill Norton, was tabling parliamentary questions in the Lords about this. So as it were, 5 or 10 years ago, we had both houses covered. Now we have none.
There's always been the rumour and the suggestion and some documentation that the Duke of Edinburgh here, Prince Philip, is interested.
I do know a little about that, but I'd really better not comment.
That's what everybody I ever ask about that always says. But I share a birthday with the Duke of Edinburgh, and I really hope that he's listening to this programme now. So, Nick, we have a problem. We're not making the progress that we need to be making, and that is upsetting and disappointing for those of us who are interested in these things. So does that mean the breakthrough, if there's ever a breakthrough that we can call a breakthrough, is going to come from the Americans or from places where there are a lot of UFO sightings like Russia or South America?
I think the breakthrough will probably come through radio astronomy, the so-called SETI program, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, now privately funded, but I mean to the tune of absolutely millions. But the next generation radio telescope, and in fact there was a story about this fairly recently in the press. I think they're still just to make the decision about the location, but it's when it goes online in 2014, I believe, it will have the capacity to pick up signals, radio signals, from any extraterrestrial civilization within about 100 light years of the Earth. And I think it's that will perhaps resolve the mystery one way or the other of are we alone in the universe or not. And I'm absolutely convinced the answer is going to be no, of course we're not alone. And I think that once we've found the signal, once we've found that through radio astronomy, so I think it will come from the scientists, not the UFO researchers. Once we've done that, that will just reinvigorate the whole field. And at that point, it will become the biggest story, I was going to say, if you'll excuse the pun, on the planet, but and beyond.
Well, the biggest story of all our lifetimes. And you reckon, you mentioned SETI, do you reckon the project that they got together where they asked all of us if we'd like to use space on our own home computers to join together into SETI at home, as they were calling it, do you think that would help?
It helps, yes, but I think this next generation radio telescope is just going to be a quantum leap above in terms of capacity, that if there are civilizations out in our small part of this one galaxy, we really should find them.
And if the Jodie Foster scientist, you know, the character from that movie Contact, actually hears that signal and verifies it is something that's not supposed to be out there,
yes.
If she comes forward and says to the government, I found something, will we get to hear about that?
Yes, there is actually a protocol about how the I think it's just it's got a very long title, but it's in shorthand just known as the detection principle or the detection protocol. But the scientific community do have rules about this, but there's no way that could, would or should be covered up. And there's that marvelous line in the film where they say to her, you know, who do we tell now? And she just says, everyone.
Yes, it's a great, that is the line of the movie. You're absolutely right. What's your wish for 2007, Nick?
That in the run-up to this 2014 radio telescope, that nonetheless, rather than just sitting back and waiting, government, military, intelligence agencies, the scientific community, do look with a little bit more of an open mind at this. And after all, if there is extraterrestrial technology out there and we can acquire some sort of understanding of it or even acquire some of it directly, I mean, the advantages in terms of military, in terms of business, are immense. So again, why not throw a little bit of resources at it? In one sense, as I was saying, it's an insurance policy, the low probability, high consequence argument. On the other side of that coin, it's an investment. It's one of these, we'll throw a little bit of resources at it, because if you really do find it, it will be the golden egg.
Of course, there are people who say we've got the technology already.
Yes, I suspect, and that takes us back, of course, to what we were discussing about what may or may not be known about this in America. But I suppose we can't really proceed on the basis of what we don't know. I'm going to go into one of my there are known unknowns and unknown unknowns mode in a minute.
I think you've taken a briefing from President Bush. Nick, it's a pleasure to talk to you again, and I hope we can talk in 2007.
Okay, I look forward to that.
The man who was the British government's official UFO researcher, Nick Pope, and I know that Nick has a few projects planned for 2007, so look out for those, and we'll tell you about them here on The Unexplained as well. Thank you for the emails. Keep them coming. Let me have any suggestions that you want to make about the programme, any feedback about it too, always gratefully received, just like it was on the radio show. The website for this show is www.theunexplained.tv, and very soon we're going to be putting together a mailing list. You can register for that soon on the site, and that'll bring you news of the developments we have planned for 2007. I say we, that's me and my webmaster Graham Mullins, who is available also to do top work for you if you need anything doing to do with a website or web design. Graham is the best. You can find a link to him on my website. Thank you to Martin for the wonderful theme. Martin, keep up the good work, my friend, and we will keep using the theme. And thank you again to you. I wish you well in 2007 in whatever you do, and I'll see you soon here on The Unexplained.